Thank you very much, Bill. Come to programs like this and you wonder, how do you get selected to go last? You'll notice in your proceedings that I don't have a paper there, and so I'm sure that's why Dr. Rush put me last. The only good thing about it, I noticed the fellow following me didn't have one either, and that's Tom Osborne. Though I remember when the decision was made to take this assignment, Dr. Rush started calling, leaving messages. I got the opportunity to go elk hunting in Colorado the first season this fall, and I was up on the Continental Divide, and I accidentally had my cell phone with me, and I decided, well, heck, I'm going to check my voicemails, and the secretary had left me a message, very urgent, need you to call in. I called in, and she said, this Dr. Rush keeps calling two or three times a day, and he wants an answer, yes or no. And I was in elk heaven, air was thin, I was on the Continental Divide, and I said, sure. And so the day is here, and here I am. No, I have a lot of respect for Ivan Rush and Doug Hickson, Steve Paisley, Jack Whittier, Don Boggs, and the whole group, Jim Gosey, who just talked. And so these guys are trying to make a difference, and you're here attending a session like this to make a difference as well. My topic again for today is, will electronic grading change the way we produce cattle? And one thing I want to assure you is, even if you don't take anything else from my talk today, it has changed the way that we procure or the way that we buy cattle and the way that we measure cattle. So I see that growing in intensity as we move on. Each year we survey our customers, both in retail and in food service, for some of their top-of-mind concerns. Obviously, as you heard Mark mention first this afternoon, food safety is still paramount in importance. It's critical. We've got to maintain it. But look at some of these other items. Weight, size of cattle, carcasses, and cuts is still a concern, or variability. Inconsistencies in quality, cutability, or as you heard Jim Gosey just mention, tenderness is a concern of theirs. And obviously, cool, country of origin labeling. Items 2 and 3 are not new to us. These are discussed every 5 years in the National Beef Quality Audit conducted with checkoff funds. And so we're still doing things as an industry to try to overcome some of that and to try to improve. As Bill mentioned, I've been with XL for a little over 4 years now. And for about 7 to 8 years, I know XL's been working to try to better align the supply chain. Mark referenced it first this afternoon as the value chain. But again, what can we do starting all the way back with genetics, all the way through to end users and ultimately consumers, to number one, deliver better beef, to coordinate supply when it's needed most readily, and to manage usage. We call this term utilization. It's not uncommon if we sell a brand to a retail division that on average is about 150 retail stores in a given state or region, if they feature T-bone steaks for 1 week's ad, it's not uncommon that you have to supply them 15 to 20 18-wheeler truckloads of nothing but short loins for T-bones. So what do you do with all the other products? The rounds, the chucks, the ribs. And so very, very big task and something that you've got to manage. We rely a lot upon key alliances and suppliers to deliver the things we need to service these brands, whether it start with cattle type, the age of cattle that we may want to control, health programs, the diet, how long they've been fed a given diet, and hopefully, ultimately, something relative to the individual identity of each of these cattle. Now, back a little bit to my talk. For over 4 years, I know I've been talking about these cameras, these vision cameras that we've implemented, and so I want to give you a little history on it and a little bit of an update on where we're at relative to the utilization of it today. We use the Canadian Vision System Research Management Services is the company that provides this technology. They actually have offices now in Fort Collins, Colorado. It is operating in all 5 of our U.S. plants, and we do have one plant north of the border in High River, Alberta, Canada. We installed our last camera in Plainview, Texas in April of 2000, so a little over 3.5 years ago. So we've been collecting data with this technology for quite some time, and we've learned along the way and obviously have developed some calculations from this. We started off early on with a goal that we would get 95% of our daily harvest scanned successfully for fat thickness, ribeye size, percent marbling, much like you would do with percent IM fat that you heard Jim reference, lean color, and fat color. And I'm happy to say today that we do a very good job of that. In fact, on average, we'll surpass 97% with successful images on them. We do have some blurbs now and then. Last week, the camera was down in plain view for 4.5 hours. We fried a hard drive. This morning, it was down for 1 hour in the same plant. But we're trying to do the things necessary in preventive maintenance, whether it be equipment-wise or personnel-wise, to minimize that as we move to the future. We feel it's an excellent tool for feedback through both suppliers to use in our plants, to develop scorecards with based on plant performance, buyer performance, and ultimately to provide information to our customers so that they can differentiate themselves from the competition. Here's an image, actually, and this lady is actually our first shift operator of the camera in our Schuyler, Nebraska plant. But each and every day, it gives us a report card on ribeyes that we may or our customers may consider to be either too big or too small or too dark in color with yellow fat, as that second picture depicts, some that are carrying a little extra bark, and perhaps those that balance the best of both worlds for premium choice brands like Certified Angus Beef, Sterling Silver, our Angus Pride, or in the case of a retail customer that may be interested in the upper half of select or low choice that may bring a little more red meat yield. We get over 27,000 of these pictures taken on our daily harvest each and every day. Looking back, what does USDA figure in this type of technology? It was endorsed by the USDA Meat Grading and Certification Branch in January of 2001. It is a very successful and useful technology for measuring ribeye area that perhaps could be used to augment their assignment of final yield grade, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for cutability. And so they do see some positive in certain aspects of this particular technology, but to date it hadn't been used to augment any USDA calls at any of the plants in the United States. This is some software that we actually developed in-house. It's a very busy slide, but this type of information can be pulled up at any of our plants, or it can be pulled up real-time at our corporate office. It includes the picture that was actually taken on one side of the carcass, and it includes the thumbprint or the sketch on what was actually traced. And I think you can see on the ribeye in blue down to the left that we had some problems tracing that if you wanted to measure ribeye area. And in fact, in one location, it overtraced some intercostal muscles along the rib cage. Because of a saw cut where some bone dust was left on the ribeye, it cut off a part of that ribeye tracing as well. We try to scan the lead side on each carcass, and if we have any errors with that side, we try to take the trailing side on the same animal. But we now have the capability of pulling all this information up and retracing as necessary to correct any of those factors. But you can see the information that accompanies the pictures, trolley tracking ID, gender of the animal, length, depth, square inches of the ribeye area, back fat measured in 4 locations, 3 forms of marbling, total amount, texture of marbling, and distribution of marbling. We have a lot of error codes now that we measure operators by. Did they get the camera all the way down on the surface? For every 1/4 inch we're above the ribeye, we underestimate the ribeye size a square inch. So we have distance sensor lights on these cameras that will not go off if the camera is held too high above the eye. Slightly blurry or very blurry, or error codes, and anything beyond slightly blurry we consider an inappropriate or inaccurate image and we won't use it. So a lot of bells and whistles that accompany this particular data. As grading coordinator for XL now, I feel comfortable that I can sit in Wichita and pull up pictures from any given lot and grade them myself and say, I hope this one was called choice, I hope this one was called select, I hope this one made it to Certified Angus Beef. I hope that this one by our personnel was discounted as a dark cutter. All of that information is available real time, not that I look at all 27,000. But as I mentioned, we do have the ability now to retrace images and correct them as necessary because of bone dust or any other computer error that may have occurred with workmanship. Some of this is repetitive. As I said, we do get over 97% of our daily harvest successfully scanned. We do monitor all of our cattle buyers with this instrument. So instead of estimating things like USDA yield grade, they have to estimate vision yield grade in all of our North American plants. We do obviously look at what comes to us from different regions, different feed yards across the United States relative to characteristics measured by this technology. We assess on a daily basis our performance in the cooler relative to our personnel as taggers looking over the shoulders of USDA personnel assigning quality grades, yield grades, and brands. I also look at USDA graders individually because those are entered electronically into our VACs or our software. We drive our business off of this camera. We estimate an expected fabrication yield coming out the other end of our fab floors and the weight in boxes of either subprimals or trim. And as I said earlier, we try to provide unique sorting strategies for different customer solutions so they can differentiate themselves in the brands or programs that they're trying to market. Let me show you a few examples. Many of you know of the National Beef Quality Audits I alluded to earlier. NCBA funded that in 91, 95, and the year 2000. In each of those audits, they tried to hand measure or call every 10th carcass in the plants that they audited on the day they visited there. So in essence, each year they collected about 10,000 individual carcass records across the United States, and in the more recent years it was seasonal audits. So the database from those three national audits is about 30,000 head. You can see if you put this technology just in our plants, we've got about the same number of records coming every day. So very, very powerful to be able to measure a lot of that detail and to make calculations from it. Well, this reflects some data, and I could show it to you for the entire period. This just happens to be a summary that I did for most of our fiscal year last year. It reflects 10.5 months of production. You see just shy of 4 million head in our Fort Morgan, Colorado, Schuyler, Nebraska, Dodge City, Kansas, and Friona, Texas plants. Left out Plainview, left out High River. We don't generate, or at that time weren't generating sterling silver there. But on 4 million head, and if you want to draw lines in the sand of where you think the marbling scores for beef break for select or higher carcasses, you can see it's not uncommon to see about 1.1% in traces. There were 35% that we harvested in those four plants last year in slight, about 35% in small, 20% modest, which is where CAB or sterling silver starts for premium choice brands, 7.1% moderate, 2% prime. So it does track, and you can track it the same way in all of your plants to the however many decimal places you would like. This is the same time frame for sterling silver. This is a brand that we have officially certified by the USDA graders. Again, it's supposed to be modest or higher. This is how the camera, if you drew those same lines in the sand, where small converts to modest, to moderate, and so forth, and prime is just slightly abundant or higher, you'll notice that, yes, it is skewed to the right, and a higher percentage of sterling silver is modest or higher. Well, how can you have 12% below the minimum requirement? Again, we scan the lead side, not necessarily the highest side of the animal. The final grade or brand reflects the highest side. And again, this is the camera calling it. Do I have the line drawn exactly right? But it gives you a tool, again, to compare and to measure from. And again, compared to our overall mix, yes, sterling silver is a premium brand with higher marbling, obviously, and it is skewed the right direction that you would expect. Here's an example over a period of time of looking at 7 USDA graders we have in a given plant. This just happens to be in our Nebraska plant, and I've camouflaged the names A through G, and you see at the bottom a plant average. But during that period of time, which was essentially a three-month period, we averaged 3.3% vision marbling, and these are the percentages of U.S. choice or higher that these seven individuals actually graded. The plant average was 56. You see several of them were right on plant average. One was a little higher. Here's one intermediate. Two in red that are opportunities for me and for my personnel, and then one right on the average. Second column here with technology shows you what percent choice did these individuals call every time the vision camera marbling changed to 0.1% as far as fat. You can see that this grader, every time it changed 0.1%, they would have increased or decreased 2% from the choice overall. So on average, it's 2%. I have some that move slower, some that move faster than 2%. And the last column here reflects what average marbling did they need over this three-month period of time to score 50% choice. You can see that some required just shy of 3%, which was the plant average. Some were substantially above it. So, as coordinator of grading activities, and I work with the plant to say, hey, we've got some opportunities, particularly right here. This individual is low, slow, and broken. And so we've got to hold more regrades on this particular individual. Before this type of technology came about, you're guessing, and you have to be there real time. And this is on 95% plus of every carcass those individuals looked at for the whole week. When the government comes into our facilities today and does an audit, they pull 10 head off, they call them with that individual, and that's their correlation. This is on every head. So very, very powerful as we move to the future to try to manage that. You heard Jim talking about ribeye area. Here again, the same 4 million carcasses. You can see 9 square inches or lower, all the way up to 20 square inches or higher. Again, the vast majority into the 11 to 14 square inch range where you'd really like it. But we have the opportunity to look at this in the south, in Nebraska, in Colorado, in Kansas, whatever plant, whatever region that we're actually dealing with. The red bars here reflect sterling silver. And the trend for our certified Angus beef is very similar. It will be less extreme in muscling, so you'll see fewer 16, 17, 18 square inch larger ribeyes, more of the moderate size as far as muscling falling into that particular category. One of the things as a company we've been very concerned about and wanting to use technology for is to improve our brands. And our demand team really dislikes these very small ribeyes going into a premium brand, 9 square inches or smaller. You see I've got easily 2.5, 2.6% on average that fell into that too small category as far as food service is concerned and portion size. One of the things we decided to do last fall, so this has been in place for a little over, or right at a year now, is to use these cameras to kick out any ribeyes less than 10 square inches going into our Sterling Silver and Angus Pride brands. And so you can see I've gone from an average of 2.6 to calendar year since last January when we implemented this, 0.6%. So I've really reduced about 2% of the Sterling Silver carcasses that used to be fabbed with ribeyes that are too small. You may ask, why do you still have 0.6%? We still include prime and sterling silver, and that's such a rare grade that if it qualifies for prime, really don't care what size ribeye it has, we're going to use it as a U.S. prime. So that's why it's not perfect. But our sterling silver now is 97%, 0.3% or higher, again, that really is in a useful range as far as I'm concerned, less than 16 square inches for ribeye, but greater than 10. Jim talked to you about some trends on what's happened to the industry on fat and muscling and marbling and showed some examples on that. Again, it gives us a tool. It's not perfect as a yield grade tool, but it's pretty dang good because it collects the individual measures. biggest shark fall is that, yeah, it doesn't tell you anything about kidney, pelvic, and heart fat, which is part of the equation. But in two of our six North American plants, we pull that out on the harvest floor and weigh it and calculate the actual percentage anyway. But it doesn't adjust fat if you have patchiness in other locations of the carcass. I don't see this as a negative, though, because most of the carcasses, if they are adjusted upward. So if we at least get a baseline read, pass that information back to producers and so forth, we may underestimate the fatness, but seldom are we going to overestimate it. But I want to make the point again, one is the highest red meat yield, yield grade 5 is the lowest red meat yield. Over 90% of our fat production today is closely trimmed or denuded. So that's the commodity today. So really, yield grade 4s and 5s don't do us much good. We've had a war on fat in this industry for what, going on 20 years now. And it's interesting, just looking at this trend line, which is our data in our five U.S. plants, the percentage yield grade 4s and 5s by fiscal year since our fiscal year 2000. This is this year since June 1. Thought we were more current as an industry. We've taken 25% off carcass weights. We've got 6.5% yield grade 4s or 5s being stamped by USDA in our facilities today. Folks are focusing more on getting more accurate on calling yield grades, particularly yield grades 4 and 5. So our data, as far as camera data, cattle haven't necessarily gotten fatter. They are calling more because they're trying to get more accurate as far as those particular calls. So don't be surprised. And I think you've read some popular press here where some other competitors have seen some of the same trend. On the 4 million head, here's what the vision yield grade consist would have looked for us last fiscal year, essentially. And if you break yield grade 4s into a low half and an upper half, you see we did have a fairly high percentage, approaching 12 or 13%. All the national beef quality audits said we had 10 to 12% yield grade 4s. And back in those eras, the government was only stamping 2%, 3% at best. So they needed to get more accurate, and I think they are in that particular location. We can track it by plant. This is by week, just an example showing camera 4s versus USDA 4s or higher percentage in red. And again, it tracks fairly well, but a heck of a technology to be able to track that as well. Well, what I'm leading up to with this technology falls in line very much with what some of the earlier speakers mentioned, is we've got to come up with some targets and some traits, and that's not new to this industry as well, but we've got to be able to measure those accurately to be able to fit price points, fit packages, fit displays, fit in products. This is an email that pictures that I received 2 weeks ago from one of our case-ready plants saying, these chuck rolls used to make chuck roast for this particular customer don't fit the trays. I thought that you were using this vision camera to sort out X, Y, and Z. For this particular customer, the vision camera was only used for middle meats. That was the agreement, not in meats, chucks and rounds. And so that's where some of the confusion was. But you see that the problems it poses. And case ready, again, whether it's related to that or related to food service or retail in general, again, we've got to optimize, not maximize, and I think that's been the theme of several speakers here this afternoon. We have a brand that we call Rancher's Registry that is sold in over 1,400 retail stores across North America today. It's not USDA certified, but it's based on multiple quality control points, and it's linked to technology. The reason these customers, these retailers, will buy this brand is because they have open access to our records. They can come in and see the camera data for all of the carcasses that have been fabbed to meet this particular brand, and it makes it very powerful as far as the trust and the directional change that you can actually make with technology like that. You've seen it as Cattleman's Collection in Kroger stores in Colorado or in Georgia. You've seen it as Sobeys Select if you've ever gone to Toronto or their Maritime banner in eastern Canada. You've seen it as Harris Teeter Rancher. If you've ever gone to the southeast, they're based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's now in four divisions of Safeway across the United States. Again, very popular, linked to technology, linked to delivering on things like this as we move to the future. We rely a lot on alliances to feed this monster of 1,400 retail stores daily. We give those alliances report cards based on hitting a weight target. This example, 89% of them fell in the carcass weight we wanted. We give them a report card on USDA calls, the premium choice, high select, low select, no roll. We give them how many had ribeyes that were too small, how many had ribeyes that were too big, how many of them hit the window that we really want them to fit into. Very, very important as you work with this supply chain to align it in the right direction. What about these customers? Instead of doing a visual audit of going into the cooler and pulling out 10 carcasses at random, measure the ribeye, measure the back fat, call the marbling, we do an electronic audit. I get this report by plant, by brand, every morning at 6 a.m. for what they did yesterday. This just shows you Dodge, Kansas, in the month of middle June through mid-July, 23,000 carcasses processed. How many of them had ribeyes that were too big, too small, marbling that was not sufficient, or were outside the carcass weight range? So we do a complete audit. It's not a random audit. It's not a subsample. It's everything entering FAB, and it's what we've got to get better at to deliver on promises. So as far as vision data expectations are concerned for us, we think that the decision to share it back with the supply chain really ultimately needs to be linked with individual animal identification. If you bring us a lot of 300 steers or heifers or 50 for that matter, and you don't have individual ID, how do you know how to line up which one had too big a ribeye, too small a ribeye, too little marbling, was a dark cutter, or was excessively fat or underfinished? We've got to have some animal identification linked to this to really maximize the benefit from it. We share it with our current alliances. They're first on the list because they've been committed for longer and can make meaningful change to emphasize and increase the good and hopefully eliminate the bad. As this moves towards payment, we will have to supply some of this information as payment is based from it. USDA has an ASTM, National Standards Committee, that's been operating for close to 2 years now, trying to define how measurements can be taken and how accurate they need to be to base payment as we look to the future. This will come under those auspices. But again, we think ultimately one day we'll get to that point or make that available if you're so interested. To date, Marcine Moldenhauer coordinates this for us. She's test-driven, buying about a little over 5,000 head on this type of approach. The two feed yards that participated in this would continue to participate in it, I'm sure, if you asked them. They thought it was very positive and liked the feedback that they got back and the information. It aligns very well with ultrasound sorting pre-harvest going to that particular mode. Data exchange, whether it's with research or other information, we like to learn from it as well. Relative to any management strategies unique to those lots or pens, whether it be implants or time on feed or diet or genetics or age. We would transfer this electronically. Again, that's most efficient. And ultimately, there could be some expectation goals or letters of understanding and sharing information like this back with the supply side. To reiterate a little bit of the things I've already made, the comments I've already made, obviously, we need a safe food supply in the beef industry. We do support individual animal identification. Jim mentioned this. We appreciate it can't all be carcass merit. You've got to balance both production and carcass merit to succeed and survive in the beef industry. We encourage you to continue to try to avoid outs. That includes dark cutters, hard bones, whatever the case may be. Better control carcass weight. Right now, we're down a little. Grades down as well. Are we going to go back up to heavy? Right now in Canada, it's not uncommon to see the average harvest rate of fed cattle or finished cattle coming to us well over 1,500 pounds. In fact, High River will surpass all of our U.S. plants this fiscal year for us on percent choice or higher. Very, very rich. Prior to 97, when the Canadians changed their grading system, it was hard to find 30%, 35% AAA or higher beef carcasses in Canada. That's choice or better. Today, they're going to average over 60%. And they were on the way to do that prior to the BSE fiasco that they actually had. I propose producing high select or better carcasses. They don't all have to be premium choice. That comment was made previously. Target for yield grade 3.4 or better. We don't believe in whole yield grades. We run our business in tenths of a yield grade, and that's where we're headed. Moderate muscling is necessary. We don't need the extremes. And I agree with Jim's comment, the wave of the future is tenderness test, not to get in a race for the most tender beef, but at least to identify those creating problems or increasing variation. And with that, it's been a long day for you. I appreciate your attendance and attention. Look forward to the discussion tonight. Thank you very much.